Welcome back to Perfectly Framed, presented to you by FantasyAndFrames.com, your premier destination for fantasy baseball relief pitching news and advice. Today's March 11th, 2021, and you are listening to episode number 39. With me, as always, is my co-host, the great Nate Markham, and a very special guest. Our guest tonight has impeccable taste, not only because he loves relievers even more than we do, but he knows the Cap'n Crunch flavor that tops them all. By the way, that's the peanut butter crunch. He's also thrifty. His advice will save you costs when it's time to draft closers in 2021. And he has the cheat code for gift wrapping. Dollar store gift bags. They save time and money. Most of you know him for his charts. But did you know which sports movie sits atop his most underrated chart? Breaking Away. You know that movie when the Italian road bicycle team comes to Indiana to save the day? Yeah. So by now, you have to know who he is. He writes for The Athletic, Fantasy Alarm. His invaluable relief pitching work can be found on his blog, Coffee and Closers. Participant in the 2021 Tout Wars head-to-head competition. Please help me welcome Mr. Greg Jewett. Greg, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for having me here. Congratulations again. I know it's an exciting time for you. And then, you know, when you're doing all those lead-ins, it's funny because the other day I was somewhere and Breaking Away was playing on a TV. And I did love that movie as a kid. I don't know if you really knew that or not, but that's kismet right there. And then the stuff with The Athletic, it's been like an overwhelming 2 weeks. I'm still trying to get my feet under me. A guy I used to write with when we were way back with FanRag, that was the first place that paid me to write. He sent me a text the other day. He's like, so you're just casually tweeting with Tristan Cockcroft now. And then today Eno was DMing me, asking me closer questions. Eno, what?
I mean, wow. Right. Like who would have thought that a PE teacher who's like, charting closers is like having a conversation with one of the craziest, smartest baseball minds of our time in Eno Sanders, right?
Yeah, I try and tell these things to my girlfriend. I mean, she's catching up to speed pretty quick, but I'm like, yeah, Eno was DMing me. She's like, what does that mean? I was like, it means there's about 1,000 other writers that would be jealous as hell. It's just kind of, and Eno's a super great guy. I want to pick his brain about the Command Plus and some other things and keep teaching me. And you said the thing about a PE teacher. The Athletic's the first thing that's given me clout with my son and then students. And it's like, oh, I write fantasy baseball. They're like, whatever. I'm like, oh, he's got hired by The Athletic. They're like, what? Because they know what it is. So anyways, thank you again. It's your guys' support's been awesome on Twitter and everything else. I appreciate everything. And let's rock this out.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Nate, what's up, buddy?
Not too much, man. Greg, like you said, we aspire to get to that point too, where maybe you're asking us questions. So now you shouldn't be asking us questions. You've done every single day, but I think bouncing ideas off each other is the one thing that I've felt that we've all collectively grown and changed over. We started really, I'd say in about October, November. And I look back at my rankings from November and I mean, there's 15 point change or 15 spot changes between some of the people because I listened to Aaron and Todd and everybody else that's come on you and just the list of, man, that makes sense. And so our little niche, I think, is carving out and it's a big one. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy.
And what I like about our niche was I forget who tweeted out the other day that said, you know, the people in this arena are really giving and they're like, hey, we'll sit down and have a beer with you. And I aspire to that. I still, I bought my old shirt died, but the first place I wrote for free was called Roto Analysis. And they were two of the first people when all this stuff happened with The Athletic to DM me and say congratulations. So for Tout Wars, I plan on wearing that t-shirt just to remember where you came from. And the weirdest part was today would have been a good friend of mine. That was the first site I wrote about closers on was with Dave Kerr when he was running his Ask Roto Baseball. That's where I started doing closers once a week and really started forming what's happening now. And today would have been his 36th birthday. And that coinciding with Eno and all the, it's just a lot of weird things going on in the universe, but I'll take it. And I think the community for closers especially is very giving and endearing. And I hope we keep that going. And it starts at the top with Doug Dennis and it filters all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you are an integral portion of that. Yeah. You're like an integral part of that. I mean, at any time you can find Greg on Twitter at GJEWETT9, Greg Jewett, on Twitter, and he will interact with you. He's happy. I mean, this Greg is giving out the information that is so valuable. Like, if it would take you, and it takes Greg, it would take you all day to literally put together his reliever recon stuff, or, you know, go through the charts and update, you know, the fifth deep, you know, upside flyer reliever in the American League East. Like, this is not something that a casual fantasy baseball player could do. But the one thing about your stuff and just relievers in general is, like, that's part of the game. It doesn't matter if you play in an 8-team league or 10-team league or 15-team DC. Like, you need to have this information, and all this information is relevant across all platforms. Before we get in and go through all 30 teams, what we like to do is start and kind of take a look back in time to the year that coincides with our episode number. So tonight we're on episode number 39. So we're going to take a look at some pitchers from 1939. And Nate, what was going on in 1939?
So I'm going to take a lateral move and kind of throw a curveball to you guys. I don't know if it's maybe a slider, maybe even a changeup. But in the month of March, so February, Greg, we went through and it was Black History Month. So we focused on Negro League pitchers exclusively. Well, March is Women's History Month. And I can actually look back to 1939 when a Dorothy Boots Clupping right-handed fireball fast pitch softball player actually was mentioned among the likes of a lot of Major League Baseball players. She actually got a chance to pitch against some of the men, which was rare, as you can imagine. But I mean, if you look back, her pitching record is minute. In 1939, really, when they started the Women's Professional Fast Pitch Softball League, baseball league, whatever really you want to call it, they didn't keep a lot of stats. So we have to fast forward to really 1944 just to get a glimpse of what she was capable of doing. And you look at a person, she carried a 3.36 ERA. She had a 47-5 walk to strikeout number. Now, that is not something that I'm raising on a pedestal, unfortunately. We here have found that a lot of our statistics from the 1920s and 30s border on the side of boring. But what she could do is find her name mixed, like I said, amongst the greatest pitchers of the time. And they thought that she had the ability overhand to actually compete with some of the men. Not a huge, huge storyline. I apologize for not a fun, in-depth story, but she does deserve some recognition for paving the way for a lot of the other women professional baseball players.
And you are just the man to give her that recognition, Nate. We appreciate that. Way to support women every day, not just in the month of March, by the way. So just support your women. My wife, I love you. She's been through a lot these last couple months. So I support anything we can talk about women. But let's go back to baseball just for this show, and then I'll get back to my wife after that. The NL leader in saves in 1939 was a showman himself, Hard Rock Clyde Schoen. Registered 8 saves for the St. Louis Cardinals, a left-handed pitcher, threw 103 innings that year, 50 Ks, 42 walks, 3.76 ERA, 1.36 WHIP, which I thought was pretty interesting with a 42 walks there in 103 innings. So pretty good job of limiting the damage off the bat. Clyde Schoen came from a really super athletic family, 9 brothers. One of his older brothers, Slim Schoen, he played for the Akron Firestone Non-Skids. Never heard of this team in my life. Apparently they were an NBA team. Akron Firestone Non-Skids. Played in the NBA, averaged 2 points a game in his career, but he was 7'2", a 7'2" brother. Clyde himself, he was, you know, pretty tall guy, a left-handed pitcher, threw the ball really hard. That's how he got the nickname Hard Rock. He did something that relievers dream of. They dream of getting a chance to start a big league game. You know, back in the 20s, when we talked about the 20s pitchers, they were interchangeable, relievers and starters. But as you moved here towards the late 30s, pitchers and into the 40s, pitchers became more specialized. Now there's relievers versus starters. Well, In 1944, Clyde Schoen got to start a game. And you know what he did? He threw a no-hitter. One strikeout, no hits. Game lasted 1 hour and 19 minutes. Like the epitome of what a reliever dreams of when they're like, you're not good enough to start, Hard Rock. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll show you. I'll show you. So, we found all these really cool stories, Greg, when we go digging back into time. And I know that you are a great sport, so you kind of looked back at some players too. What'd you find?
Well, I did look back at players, but I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't go all the way through any backstory. So kudos to both of you. That's beyond impressive. I'll go with Johnny Murphy of the Yankees. He appeared in 38 games in 1939. He finished 34 of them. They prorate 19 saves. I think it's funny they try and apply saves when you look at Stathead and the search thing, since it wasn't a stat till the year I was born in 1969. Talk about Kismet again. He only won three of his nine decisions, but a huge 30-28 strikeout to walk ratio and an ERA plus of 99. So his 61.1 innings, you know, proved productive for the Yankees at that time. But it's just funny when you see that stuff. I was amazed at how many guys finished games. So, I mean, a different pitcher from the White Sox, he finished 56 of them. I think that led the league that year. So, you know, there were guys kind of getting into kind of that role, just not the, you know, the closer as we know it. And it's good that you brought up Clyde Schoen, because, you know, now with the news of Alex Reyes, everybody's at a rush to figure out, can he throw 100 innings this year as a reliever, and how does that relate to what he can do from a fantasy standpoint? Because I still think there's a market inefficiency in how we're treating Freddie Peralta and Alex Reyes and a few of these other guys, that if they throw 85 to 100 innings this year in piggyback, tandem, whatever, if they vulture wins and they're giving you strikeouts and helping with ratios, you know, that sometimes I think beats a six starter on a guy in a six-man rotation to stream for a week. You can save a roster spot by keeping these guys around, just flipping them in when you need them, as opposed to chasing the flavor of the week. And then he gets blown up and you're like rats, unless you're just targeting that Pirates offense, which could be bountiful this year.
Mm-hmm. If there's one, if we want our listeners to get one thing from the show, it's that. So you can just turn off, literally you can turn off the podcast now if you wanted to, because that is such a piece of valuable information in 2021. It's something that, like, you can't scream enough from the rooftops, right? Like, innings mm-hmm. are going to be down across the board for starters anyway. They have to be. And these relievers, they had a basically a normal year. Like, every day is crazy for a reliever. They never know when they're going to pitch when they show up to the ballpark. And so 2020 for relievers was probably pretty normal. You know, it was pretty much, I mean, maybe they threw a couple doubleheaders and they had to get, you know, get up and down and get up and down twice in one day or something like that. But outside of that, I mean, they had basically regular seasons and their arms are super fresh. Like, we're talking about 20 innings. So those guys that you mentioned are coming into 2021. Like, yeah, 100 innings, whatever you need, boss. Like, look at David Price in LA. You know what I mean? Like, you only want me to throw 95 innings? I don't care which 95 innings those are. I'll come out and get wins. And so I think that is the resource you need to tap into.
Yeah, he was in the article I posted today. And that's the whole point, you know. Freddie Peralta today in spring training, 2.2 innings, 7 strikeouts.
Yeah. Okay. Too.
So if he does that twice in a week, now I won't bank on the 7 strikeouts, but if he gives me 5 innings a week and I get 12 strikeouts, that's way better than a streamer I'm going to get off of the wire to try and plug in there. Now, will he blow up every now and again? Sure, anyone's going to, but I'd rather take my chances on – I took – in the TGFBI, I have Reyes before – I took him before the news about the 100 innings pitch, just because I wanted a guy to give me upside innings. Mm-hmm. And I had Peralta already, so they're both with me. So I'm going to ride or die with these guys. And in a deeper league, I think they're a really tangible thing. And it's – again, like I said, I think people are kind of ignoring it or putting their nose up to it. And there's younger guys like Shane McLaughlin from the Rays that are on the come. I mean, these guys are going to be very valuable assets in the coming weeks. So it's going to be curious to see how it all plays out.
And you have not even mentioned the one who is blowing up more than anybody else. And I have the chance to cover the AL and NL Central exclusively, the Cincinnati Reds, and a one TJ Anthon. Yeah, I mean, in the last 2 weeks, I've watched – I mean, he was nominated. I did an auction draft two nights ago. And he went, granted, it's a generic one, went for like $4, $5 when he wasn't even getting drafted. This is a 10 team league. This isn't even a 12 teamer, a 15 teamer. And just the new, the helium is incredible. Warranted, if you ask me, but like you mentioned with Peralta, just if I grant it's early in spring training, but total for spring training, he has 3.2 innings pitched, 10 strikeouts and five in, you know, hits and walks.
You have the slider. I mean, come
on. That slider looks nasty too.
It's just going to be curious. And if you've been reading Coffee and Closers, I've been hyping TJ Antone since November. So, I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I was hoping he was going to be the closer, but and the news that I saw, and I was wondering why Garrett hadn't thrown yet, seeing that he's nursing a forearm strain. I don't like hearing that at all. That's not good. Him nor Sims have appeared in a spring game yet. Wouldn't it be the ultimate, rope-a-dope if Lorenzen ends up being the closer after all of this when he's trying to be in the starting rotation? Because see, Trent Rosenkranz just said today that Jose De Leon's 8 strikeouts yesterday might have put him ahead of Lorenzen for that last spot in the rotation. So there's a lot of moving parts with that team. So trying to throw – that's the – you're playing the roulette wheel with that squad. So I'm probably going to – unless it's Antone, I'm not touching anything in that Reds back end.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned De Leon. Actually, back about – when in during winter ball, I read a story about him striking out, you know, 8 of 10 batters he faced, and I reached out to him on Twitter and said, hey, saw your start, loved watching you when you first came, you know, came through. How's the fastball looking? And he responded saying, sitting in the 96, 97 range with great movement. Thanks for asking. And I was like, fantastic. I said, Aaron, I'm going to ask this guy to come on, and bam. So I was like, hey, how would you like to come on our show and talk a little bit about it? We're talking about transition.
Nate's like, no, wait, hang on, Nate, you're leaving out one part. Nate's like, you know, he's got a great grasp of the English language. Like, I don't think we're going to need to like interview him in Spanish or something, you know, like, cause you know, that's a realistic thing. You know, he's got Nate's like lining this interview up. He's like, yeah, we're getting him on the show. And then go ahead, Nate.
It was his dad. He goes, I should actually let you know. He said, yeah, I think that sounds great. I'll get something set up. And I'm like, guys, I think De Leon's going to come on. I was like, this is great. by the way, I should let you know, this is actually his dad. I'm not sure if he has time to come on or not. I was like, well, shit. Like, so I have now been since the interaction, I've been the De Leon, you know, banging the drum. And I was just telling Aaron before
we should have had Dan on.
I know, but he has 14 strikeouts, I believe is what I said in spring so far. It's, it's been
ridiculous.
But ridiculous. Unfortunately, that he also has, 6 walks and 8 hits in 8 innings to go along with those. So a little bit of a volatile arm, but electric.
Yeah, well, I think Greg hit it on the head. Like, that's one of these bullpens to stay away. So, okay, it's a bullpen show. We've got Greg Jewett on. We're doing the bullpens. We're gonna go through them. So, Greg, Nate, when he went through to get the teams in order, Nate took them by their mascot. I'm not sure why he put them in order by their mascot. So we'll go by your closer charts, and we'll start in the American League. And you know, not every team needs a whole soliloquy or anything here, but and one of those is probably the Baltimore Orioles. I know in February you were staying away. Are you still staying away?
I'll take a late round flyer on Tanner Scott. I like the stuff. He made strides last year, especially with the command. I still think Cesar Valdez is part of this. They keep saying they're going to stretch him out, then in the spring they keep throwing him for one inning. So which one is it? The hardest thing about the Orioles is Brandon Hyde has never named a closer during his tenure there. Never. So he doesn't believe in it. So, you know, they're not going to win a lot of games. So this would be – he's your – if you're taking 3 closers to pitch in your regular week, you're taking Scott and just leaving him on the bench in case somebody gets hurt so you have a fill-in until you go to the FOB. So that's how I treat them. I'm not going to go out and look for Tanner Scott, but if he falls on my lap as my last pick, I'm okay with it. But – other than that, Hunter Harvey, they're still saying they're going to manage him. Can he work back-to-back games, things of that nature? The kid's never been healthy. He's got upside, but too much traffic and too much injury history for me. So, yeah, it'd be pretty much Scott or bust. Or, like I said, you can take Valdez as a walk-off, but who knows what kind of role they're going to fill him in. They're going to be throwing stuff at the wall all year.
Yeah, the Red Sox have have had kind of thrown stuff at the wall recently with their end game pitchers. One of the guys that has stuck, unbeknownst to himself, has stuck, and that's Matt Barnes looked pretty good in his last outing.
Yep, and Ottavino looked good yesterday during his debut. The weird thing, I don't know if you read that article that I posted, but in the interview, Alex Cora said that he doesn't foresee Ottavino entering any dirty innings. So he's not going to come in like in the eighth inning with a runner or two on. He wants Ottavino coming in clean innings. So I don't know if we're reading between the lines there. But he also intimated that he burned out Barnes a couple years ago, always putting Barnes into those highest leverage moments. This one's going to come down the wire, but here's the kicker. Both of them are free agents at the end of the year. So Boston could trade both of them if they fade in the standings. So if I'm doing this bullpen, I'll take the long view and same thing. I'll take a late round flyer on Darwin's and Hernandez, hope he improves his command, and then hope he gets about 5-7 saves after the trade deadline.
Nate, I know you like Darwin's.
I do. I think actually, and Greg was telling me, just throw strikes. And that's kind of the key. Please. Just
trust your stuff. Go after people. Come on, Darwin's.
And he does. He tries to, I think, be a little cute sometimes. And I get it. It's, you know, I mean, but yeah, trust your stuff is exactly right.
Trust in a closer. Tony La Russa has it. Liam Hendricks in Chicago. He's the closer. So we won't skip over the White Sox, though. I know you mentioned like the Freddie Peraltas and types. Do you think that Garrett Crochet is one of those types that could throw a whole bunch of innings and get some good ratios for you?
I think he can give you great ratios. I was hoping he would get longer outings. Maybe they'll stretch him out. They're saying initially he's going to be in the back third, which means he's going to be in the seventh, eighth, or ninth. So could he get 1 point, you know, four outings? Sure. Now Kopech is kind of projecting towards the role I was hoping that the crotchet rocket would get, but we'll take what they give us. Now I have nothing against getting Kopech or Crochet, so you know. Crochet is also on my TGFBI squad, so I just loaded up with high octane arms that I can roll in. Now, of course, I lost Framber Valdez, so it's not like I'm a genius. So
you're a genius when it comes to the back end here. You're a genius when it comes to the back end here.
Nah, stop.
And you said the perfect term to go to the next team, and it's a near and dear to my heart, the Cleveland Indians. I don't know if there's any more in for me. Saddened state going in. Real baseball interjects into fantasy baseball a little too much sometimes with everything. But I'm not – I'm just going to let you tell me. James Karinchak, over under 50% that he actually saves, over 50% of the team saves. That's a lot harder way to answer that. Good luck.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. You know what? The way that they're talking – today I'll say under. Now that could change in 3 days if Tito Francona comes out and says he's my closer. But the longer this draws out, the more it tells me that they're going to use him like they did Andrew Miller in 2018, where it's the highest leverage moment. And Miller ended up with less than 50% compared to Cody Allen. So I guess that's where I'll hedge my bet again. And it kills me because I love Special K. He's got the personality, the flair. I think two things are working against him, his walk rates in the past, and the team's going to want to manage his salary. So I think they're more willing to let Clase or Wickren close games as well. And this could be one of those, whoever hits the thing, but it pains me to say under.
Yeah. Who's going to hit the thing in the ninth inning for the Tigers? Jeez. Good luck with that.
You know, it's this year when I was reading all the stuff from the beat writers, they said the guy who pitches like after the starter is the person that projects to be the closer. The two people who have done that the most so far are Joe Jimenez and Gregory Soto. So I don't know. I think Soto is going to get kind of stuck in the Karinchak role where he's going to be the highest leverage pitcher. So some he might get a save some games, but some games he's going to be in the seventh or eighth and frustrate his owners. This is kind of like the Orioles for me. I don't know how many games they're going to win, so I would probably avoid it. Jimenez burned me hard last year, so I'll let somebody else. If they hit on him, God bless you, but I don't want it to be me. So I think that's – I do like Jose Cisnero, but sometimes he loses control of his arsenal. he's a wild card in there. And then if Zach Hess can get his stuff together, he's a dynasty name to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think anyone would sneeze at the Detroit bullpen. Doesn't matter what how deep your league is. Let's go to Houston. This is a locked in closer, Brian Presley. But we all know how often locked in closers lose their job. So should Ryan Presley lose his job, is there a plan B on Houston's roster today?
No. They intimated it's Cheesek, and then a different beat writer said he's trying to make the team. So that can't give you a warm fuzzy. I've never been a Baez guy, even in this time with the Dodgers. I mean, he takes forever to throw a pitch. He's frustrating as hell, walks too many people, gives up home runs too many times. You know, you would think it'd be Paredes, but same thing. He's in that stopper role where he can do multi-innings or go into the highest leverage moment. So I don't think they would pin him in there. If something happens with Presley, I don't know if there's a minor leaguer that they can, a pitcher that they can, it would have been like Whitley. You would have thought about him, but now he's getting surgery. If he goes down, they either have to make a trade or bite the bullet on Osuna. And I don't think they're willing to do it.
Speaking of trades, the Kansas City Royals, I believe, and this is a one close to home again. I am the anti Greg Holland. As Scott Jen says the never Greg Holland. And I think that there's, you know, that might be a 50-50. I can see there being a very good chance that Greg Holland is on a lot of people's teams that do well because he just somehow has kept his walk rate down again. He's pitched nothing but clean innings so far in spring. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for those walks just to kind of come back, and they're not. Tell me a little bit about Kansas City.
I don't trust Matheny. So the only time he settled in with anybody was when it was Rosenthal, then they traded him. So Matheny had ties with him. I don't think Matheny cares. He's just going to use whoever. And even down the stretch, I mean, Holland got a little dinged up at the end of the year. So then it was like one day it was Barlow, the next day it was Hahn. I mean, I don't see that stopping. And everybody wants it to be Stallmount, and he's got the stuff. But same thing, he needs to improve his command just a little bit. I think Kansas City is going to be one of those teams this year where something happens and you're going to rush to the wire to add the guy. And then a week later, a different guy gets the save. And then you're like, well, what the hell did I do? So This is another one. No, thanks. Somebody else can have the headache. I'll place my bets elsewhere.
Don't blow your fab. You heard it here first. Do not blow your fab on the first guy who gets a save, not named Greg Holland in Kansas City. For sure.
And I ignored my own advice last year. I spent money on Sulcer and Gyro Diaz the week they were big. And I wrote in my own goddamn column, think ahead and get Rafael Montero because he'll probably be getting saves next week. Did I even listen to myself? No, you dumbass. I had those two for big money. They blow up. I could have got Montero for a dollar. No one even bid on him because I was talking about him that week. And yeah, I would have had eight saves off of for a buck.
Do what Greg says.
My goal this year, my promise to my girlfriend, I said, I'm just going to trust my gut. No more of this doing the group thing. Just go with what I'm saying instead of all the other stuff. And, you know, I'm going to be wrong sometimes, but I'd rather be wrong trusting my gut than being wrong because I'm like, well, everybody else is doing it, so I must.
Or you think that it's maybe a good opportunity or option, I guess, to maybe just spend up and take someone like with the Angels, with Raisel Iglesias. That's been – Aaron and I's probably go to.
That's reliever. Our gut. That's our gut call, Nate. For like,
well, you RP1. Can because yeah, Madden's going to run him out there, and the only guy that could threaten him is Mike Myers, and he's looked terrible so far this spring. I mean, he did turn the corner last year, but you know he had a scoreless inning today, but it was with two hits and two strikeouts. So Iglesias usually turned things on. He didn't want to be a part of that fluid bullpen in Cincinnati, and basically got himself traded the hell out of there. So he's happy. He's pitching for a contract. So yes, Raisel. I know a lot of people don't trust him because they think of the old Raisel, but ever since he started elevating that fastball, he's a different pitcher.
Does now on to Minnesota. Do they have one closer? Do they have twins or do they have triplets?
They can even have a quartet.
Yeah.
Robles today hit 96 miles per hour with his fastball and struck out the side on 11 pitches. They have like magic up there, and Rocco Baldelli came from the Rays. He does not care who gets saves. He cares about getting a win. So you know what? I think this could be like the Milwaukee Brewers in 2018 where three guys get 15 or more saves. It may be the main two with Colome and Rogers, but I think ancillary saves are still going to fall to Duffy and Robles.
And with the we're not necessarily talking about some of the middle relief, the long inning guys, but Jorge Alcala is a name that you see. I mean, I don't want to throw him into the Peraltas and the Reyes. I don't see that many innings, but I see quality 60 to 70 innings out of him this year.
I want him to. He's just sometimes prone to the blow. He's a little more prone to blowups than those other guys. But if he gets his, I would take a wait and see approach. If he starts strong, then I might wade into the water and get in there. I wouldn't have him at the onset, but I understand what you're saying because there is a chance, especially with the last two starters in that rotation. You know, you're not going to get a lot of innings out of Schumacher, and at some point, you know, it's going to be. What's his face? The ground ball machine with the glasses.
Randy Dobnak.
He'll be a part of that rotation, but he only goes five innings at most. So, you know, that bullpen's going to be forced to do some of that stuff. So if Alcala does step up and show better command, then I see what you're saying. He could be a poor man's Fab Five Freddy.
Aroldis Chapman has his eyes set on his 300th career save this year. We know he's locked in as the Yankees closer. They're one of the, you know, 10 teams maybe that just make sure that their closer pitches just in safe situations. So, you know, he's a very safe fantasy bet for sure. But
I actually like him this year because usually I hate him, but this year he's being priced a little bit below where the top two are than he should be. If I'm like in pick six in a 15-team draft, I would love to get him in the fifth round. I think that's a great spot to grab him. Plus, he added a splitter. He's bringing a splitter back. He threw two of them his last time out and got a swinging strike on one of them. And he did hit 99 in spring. So if he's hitting 99 in spring and he's added a pitch, we could actually see his first 30-save season.
Wow. All right, you wrote the letter. Well, not to yourself. You should have listened to yourself last year on Rafael Montero. You're writing a letter to yourself this year. Are you taking Rafael Montero? And we skip the A's. I know we'll go back to him.
I think you can take him because he has leash because Graveman and Middleton have struggled out of the gate. You do have Sam Delaplan further down the line, but I think he would come in as a setup guy. So Seattle, I think, is pretty committed to letting Montero be the closer this year, even though that's been a volatile spot to get him. I'm just a little wary. I really want to keep watching his velocities. If the velocities are there, then I'm okay with it because I know they're going to give him leash. But I was in a spot where I had to decide between him and Will Smith and Kimbrel, and I might have made the wrong choice because I went Kimbrel. I'm starting to come around on Will Smith, but we'll see where it goes.
You wrote the letter to Montero. I wrote a love letter earlier in the offseason to Jake Diekman. He broke my heart, or the A's broke my heart when they signed Trevor Rosenthal.
That's not your fault.
I mean, I still like some Diekman, but, you know, Rosenthal's the guy, right?
Yes. Yeah. As long as he's healthy, yes. And he went there because they told him he could close. He said he turned down multi-year deals to go to other teams because they wouldn't guarantee him save chances. So I think that tells you everything.
You're staying at a Holiday Inn Express, so you are smarter than you were yesterday. So be the smartest person in all of fantasy baseball and tell us who is the Rays reliever that we need to have on our teams.
I think it's a Nick Anderson bounce back year. He did a very candid interview about how the COVID affected him mentally and physically. And he said he was worn down just by everything. Just, you know, you can be mentally drained. And he said during the playoffs, he was. He just couldn't get into a rhythm with all of the stuff. He had a nice little clean inning the other days for his spring debut on 9 pitches. I know Fairbanks is the hype boy right now, and Diego Castillo is kind of the do everything for them sort of a person. We finally get Nick Anderson at a depressed price. So I think this could be the year. But you're only getting, I say, 20 saves. You know, I'm not going to say he's going to save 30 just because we know, I call it the Rays roulette. That's just who they are.
Yeah.
We promised that our listeners that listen regularly, we did not pay Greg to be on this episode because he has backed up every reliever we've taken in all of our high stakes drafts so far. Exactly. It's because we go and use Greg's tools, which are out there for everyone to consume. We're consumers too. And so, you know, we to have that foundational bit of information, like all this information to build, you know, your unconscious or subconscious mind when you get into these drafts, is invaluable. Some guy who's a total head case, and coming off an injury, and now his closer in waiting, Jonathan Hernandez, is probably out for at least a significant portion of time. Some guy that Nate and I have drafted probably in every single league before. We probably set the min on him in every league. Jose Leclerc, we can't give him up.
Really? Wow. God bless you. You guys are more patient than I am. And it's funny because I did a write-up on him a couple of years ago for Fantasy Alarm, and he like retweeted it. I'm like, he's a cool dude, just like your interaction with De Leon. But the good news is today he made an appearance and did not issue a walk. The bad news is he gave up three hits and a run. So at least he's throwing strikes. I think you guys hit it between the ears with this guy, and I really want to see what they do. But right now, I mean, Ian Kennedy's his backup.
Yeah.
You know, DeMarcus Evans is nursing a lat injury. Joely Rodriguez is still working his way back. Neither one of those has appeared in a spring game. So he's got leash. So we're going to find out. If he gets blundered in April, it's going to be ugly. But if he can get his feet under him and trust, and this is another guy who just needs to trust his stuff. If he can do it, he can take that and run. And they really wanted Hernandez to be the multi-inning stopper guy anyways. I don't think that was really a threat to saves, but yeah, you know, he was the it boy for a little bit, but that UCL is scary.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would rather have the between the ears issue or an elbow issue. And unfortunately, that's the one thing suppressing Kirby Yates from, I think, being closer to the top of a lot of other people's rankings overall. How high is he on yours?
Well, Yates, his velocity today was pretty much in line with 2019, 2020. His max fastball was 93.8 today. That lines right up with those two seasons. So I think Rob Silver said it best. We had an interaction on Twitter, and he said that he thinks Yates will get the majority of saves, but he also thinks that the Blue Jays will not run him into the ground. So he's not going to get a lot of back-to-back. They're going to treat him like, if you remember when Ken Giles kind of had his initial elbow thing, and they would not pitch him on back-to-back days, I think you're going to see a similar circumstance. So it's like Yates isn't going to go back-to-back in April or, you know, three times in 4 days. That they're taking the long view, so that he's going to get saves, but Romano's still going to be a part of things there. And deep dark horse there is Tyler Chatwood's pitching pretty well in the bullpen, and he did in the past too. So if anything happens to Romano or Yates or whatever, Chatwood's a guy to keep tabs on there. And they do like Merriweather as a multi-inning guy with strikeout upside too. Just he's another guy that just struggles with health.
The most pressing question, now we're done with the American League, we'll move on to the National League, but the most pressing question in the Arizona bullpen is, how do you say Stefan Crichton's last name?
I believe it's Crichton.
Crichton. Okay. Is he gonna eat into Soria here? Is Soria going to eat into him? Or are they just going to eat each other alive and there's not much value?
All right. Well, here's your my guy here, and if I was in a 50 round DC in round like 48, I'm taking JB Bukauskas. Oh, sorry. I know. Were you hoping for DeCastier?
No, I thought you were going Ginkle.
Oh, no. We've all seen what happens with Ginkle. No, Ginkle was a tease. I mean, he's not bad. But here's the thing. Bukauskas, even when he was coming out of college, scouts thought that he's a smaller pitcher, which is hard for me to say because I'm 5'7 and he's 6 foot. They're saying he's a smaller pitcher. So here's the thing. He's got a mid-90s fastball and a wipeout slider, and he was always trying to get a third pitch. Well, we all know what happens to good starting pitching prospects that can't get a third pitch. They end up in the bullpen. He's made three clean outings so far in spring with 6 strikeouts. Mr. Soria and Mr. Crichton cannot replicate that kind of a thing. Now, Arizona is not going to rush him in there. And the Soria Crichton thing is kind of funny because Mike Hazen brought in Soria and Lavulo is loyal to Crichton. So that's going to be a real battle of wills right up until the start of the season to who gets that closer job. And it might be one of those things where they use them both early and whichever one does better sticks. But as the season goes on, I'd really pay close attention. Even if they send Bukauskas to the alternate site, I think he's the closer of the future for this team.
If you have two different closers that might get opportunity, maybe Atlanta might do the same thing. I think you mentioned that you're kind of starting to warm up a little bit to Will Smith. I kind of am too, a little bit more so. I thought the 150, 160 variance in ADP between him and Chris Martin factored into me taking Chris Martin. But we've also talked about the fact that Schnitker's kind of an old school coach and kind of likes that righty in the ninth inning. How much do you read into that?
And yet, here's what I'm going to say to you. If they're in high leverage, who the heck else can get a right-hander out in the eighth inning if it's not Chris Martin?
That's true.
Luke Jackson.
They got a lot of lefty. Yeah, they got a lot of lefties.
Carl Edwards Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got Matzik and Minter that can match up with lefties up and down a lineup, and then you can still bring in Smith at the end. You know, they're paying Smith a lot of money. If he's not going to be the closer, I find that I'm leaning to the salary here. And I really think the hate's gone too far on Will Smith. I'm starting to come around on him, as I was saying before. So yeah, I think Martin will get saves, but I think it's more of a, you know, 65-35 rather than people thinking it's going to be a 50-50.
Gotcha.
The hate was real in Wrigley Field last season with Craig Kimbrell, losing his job and just not having it on the mound at all. Just an absolutely putrid performance to start the year. And then he quietly had a pretty impressive, like, last nine innings. I know nine innings sounds like this, like the smallest sample in the world, and it is. It was like half the season. Yeah, it was like half the season. So half of his 2020 campaign was, I mean, lights out, brilliant, like 2014 flashback Kimbrell throwing the fastball by everybody kind of thing.
Yeah, and he only had one walk in that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know which two-faced Kimbrell are we going to get.
If we can get his velo up to 97, 98 by the start of the regular season, I'll feel a lot better. Again, I'm nervous because I took him as my first closer in the TGFBI. I was going to take Rosenthal, but I grabbed somebody else because I had to fill a different hole. And so when it came back, obviously he wasn't there. And so I just, same thing. I let first base and closer drift a little bit. You know, I don't want to be living on the FOB thing. So my closers ended up being Kimbrell. And then I took my man, Jordan Hicks. And then I also took in the later rounds. Crap. I'm so fried right now. I'm forgetting, but it'll come to me in a little bit.
But so, like that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But I mean, oh, I got Daniel Bard on the
Daniel
cheap.
Bard, there I you mean, go.
Yep. So I was like, you know, if something happens to Kimbrell, at least I've got Bard and Hicks for a little bit. And then I'll figure something out as it goes along. But yeah. So here, Kimbrell just needs to get up. Now I added a guy to the list today. I happened to be watching the game on TV and this hulking 6'8" guy came out to the mound. I got to look at his name, Trevor McGill, throwing 96 miles per hour. He looked pretty good. Now, 6'8" guys who can throw 96, 97. The funny thing was the announcer was like, when he's 6'8" on the mound, he looks about 12 foot out there. He's a big human being. So the guys on the WGN were saying that the team really likes him. So I put him into the old high upside future and we'll see what happens. So he did get two strikeouts today in a clean inning, and we'll watch him the rest of the spring and see what's happening.
Always have a pen when you're talking to Greg Jewett when he's mentioning these names. I'm going to literally, as soon as I get off of this show, I'm going to go back and watch McGill's outing today if it's on MLB.TV.
He's a big dude, man.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, if we want to go back and watch, if we want to watch the Reds, none of the closers that we had hyped up for the last 60 days, you'll be watching, because it appears that everybody is pretty much on the shelf right now, with the exception of one, I'd say Man Crush, that maybe you have, Greg. Who may that be?
What, my man TJ?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were going to bring up, you know what's funny is I love Sean Doolittle as a person, but man, he does not look good right now. He might be on the DL with a neck surgery soon because he's watching everything fly out of the ballpark. I mean, he made the joke to Rosencrantz that he's working on his Jedi stuff. And again, he's got a great sense of humor. He's a wonderful human being. Him and his wife do great things for the community. I love Sean Doolittle as a person, but I don't know. And we're all like, oh, is it Garrett? Is it Sims? Neither one's played in a game yet. I mean, you know how minuscule that little thing I found on Amir Garrett was? It was like at the bottom of a game notes thing on MLB.com, like the next to last little like blip. And I was like reading. I was about to give up and I'm like, what the hell? So that caught my attention fast. And now there's more questions than answers than even before in the Reds bullpen. So I want nothing to do with it. And remember, Derek Johnson, the pitching coach, was the guy that stuck Hader behind Jeffress and Knebel in 2018 when we all wanted Hader to be the closer alone. So that's the situation I was talking about where three guys got 15 saves. That was Johnson as the pitching coach, and him and Bell had the same philosophy. Stay away.
Yeah. Daniel Bard, you've already mentioned him. You feel like he's safely in the job at least to start the season?
Yeah. I mean, Oberg's going to be like Yates. They're going to ease him into things. He's not going to be able to handle back to back. He's coming off of thoracic arm stuff. I mean, God bless. Oberg's another guy. I really like him. And he pitches well in Coors. He's one of the few that can do it, but Bard has a pretty good leash in that bullpen. And I'm keeping an eye on that Jordan Sheffield kid they got in the Rule 5, but he's not ready to close any games out yet. But that's Justice's brother, but he can hit 96, 97. So that'll help their bullpen as the year goes on.
You think there's mentions? I keep seeing Robert Stevenson's name thrown around.
Yeah, boy, he burned me hard last year because I pounded the drum for him. I was like, man, this kid's got the stuff, and then he had nothing. Now again, he's saying he was injured and he has been pitching well. I just don't know how everything's fine in spring. It's different. And at least Bard has pitched in Coors. Stevenson hasn't thrown in Coors. And Jake McGee even said in an interview, he said, pitching in Coors just messes with your head because your breaking pitches don't break. You know, he was always a fastball guy anyways, but he just said you couldn't get a feel when you throw in Coors. And it took him time even with the Dodgers to get back on track. So Coors is an animal, so we'll have to see how Stevenson handles it.
Speaking of the Dodgers, they are one of these teams that have just handed the ball to their closer, Kenley Jansen, for the better part of a decade.
Unless it's the World Series.
I was going to say, they don't, and fantasy players shouldn't care about what happened in the World Series either. They shouldn't care about what happens in the playoffs because the Dodgers are going to win like 111 games or some crazy number, and Jansen's going to get the lion's share of these saves, right?
Yeah, that's what Dave Roberts is telling us. So, he's been very consistent with it through the years. So there's no reason. But, you know, it's funny. He had a nice outing the other day, and then I'm reading he's working on his mechanics on the side. It's like some of this stuff's not adding up with him. And I did write about today. It's like everybody loves Brusdar or Gratterall. And, I mean, I get it. He has good gifts sometimes and whatever. But I think Victor Gonzalez or David Price would close over Brusdar Gatterall. I mean, I'm sorry. He doesn't strike anyone out. I mean,
he doesn't strike anyone out.
He's going 99 miles an hour, yeah. And you have a 10% strikeout rate or less. It's like, how is he the closer of the future? I don't know. I think his Z contact was in the 90s. It's like, how is that a closer? I'm sorry.
If we weren't best friends like 2 minutes ago, we're best friends now, Greg. I mean, I never got the Brusdar Gratterall thing. I just have
people keep hyping him, and I'm like, what? So I wrote that today. I put his numbers versus Victor Gonzalez. I'm like, which one would you put in the ninth inning if you had to choose? I mean, it's not even close.
Not even close. No.
Be close in his say. What's close is that I think based off of now, I'm going off of kind of what when Craig Mish speaks, I do listen. And he seems to be pretty confident that Anthony Bass is going to get the role in Miami. Yimi Garcia, a lot of people, I think, want to see him with the role in some capacity, but I'm pretty firm on Bass. Are you?
Yeah. Luckily, I used to do some radio spots with Craig back when he was doing some stuff in New York on air. So he would have me on like once a week and we would talk closers. So the moment they signed Bass, I sent him a message and he told me, yes, Bass in the ninth. He said, Bass, Garcia, Floro. And then as the year goes on, he says, watch out for John Curtis.
Okay.
There you go. Anything to watch out for in Milwaukee, or is it just the hater show? And Devin Williams has to put up some ridiculous kind of year again to be fantasy relevant.
We need to see Williams throw. He's only done stuff on the side. He hasn't been in the spring training game yet either. He finished the year with an injured shoulder, and I don't like shoulder injuries. I love Devin Williams, but every year I think we need – see, this is like the when Anderson popped, we overdrafted him, and then it disappointed us. Williams popped, we're going to overdraft him, and he's probably going to disappoint us. You need the next guy, not – you know, you said Crochet and a few others. There's other guys that could be in that mold that are going to come in and do this thing this year, mm-hmm. not necessarily the one that did it. And again, that's on us. We all draft that wrong. We have to be looking at this year, not last year.
And coincidentally, let's
look at a segues have been funny, by the way.
They're not intentional, but yeah, it's been a kismet sort of day. So let's keep it rocking.
Exactly. It's really easy. It makes my job 10 times easier to think of some kind of clever segue other than, let's forget 27 innings ago and let's remember just last year, Edwin Diaz. Ariel Cohen told us that he is his number one closer on his board. Where does he come in on yours?
I don't quite trust. I trust the stuff. I love Edwin Diaz. I just don't like his manager keep coming out and saying that he wants to. Rojas keeps saying the things that Bell said that pissed off Iglesias. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I worry about here. Okay. So if Rojas puts Diaz out in an eighth inning, I can see Diaz having a, you know, internal hissy fit and pitching
throw one underhand. He'll give up a 3-run home run.
And then he's going to go to the interview. I mean, Iglesias was in the interview room last year going, I'm a closer. I'm not a seventh inning pitcher. And Diaz, I think, is the exact same person. So hopefully Rojas can handle that. And now, you know, Lugo being hurt kind of takes a little of the threat away. But Trevor May was one of 12 pitchers last year when I do my Hader breakout thing every year. When Hader had his big burst, it was swing strike percentage 15% or greater, K minus BB 25% or greater, and contact 67% or below. May was one of 12 relievers to do that in 2020. So he's a very good pitcher. Do I think he's a threat to Diaz? No. The only thing that threatens Diaz would be the stability of Rojas and how he handles him. We knew Diaz was going to be the closer when Van Wagerman was there because he was tied to him in his legacy. Van Wagerman's gone, so a little bit of that leash is there. So, you know, Diaz is funny because he'll have these stretches where he's unbelievable, and then his mechanics go off the rails, and he gives up a couple of home runs and walks, and then he gets things back in order. But when you do that stuff in New York, it gets exacerbated. So, again, I love Diaz, and his strikeout upside is tremendous. He's a top five closer to me. I just worry about Rojas. That's my only concern. And Ariel's a fantastic player. So I have to match wits with him in tout wars, which I'm really not looking forward to.
As a Mets fan, Greg, I hear everything you're saying, and I think the meltdown could come any second. But one thing that I think this is more baseball related than fantasy baseball related is Edwin Diaz was the biggest personality on that team for the last two seasons. And that's gone now. He's not the biggest personality anymore. And you've got a guy in the room in Francisco Lindor who I know this doesn't make much sense, but the shortstop walking up to the reliever when he walks that leadoff batter and has a conversation with him and loosens him up, I think that's going to be a big help to Diaz. And
that's a fair point. Yeah, Lindor's a very good leader. So that could be exactly what Rojas needs, is having somebody in the locker room to back him up. So, yes, that's a fair possibility. So. I think the hate's gone too far on Diaz too in drafts. I think he drifts a little too far than he should.
Could there ever be enough hate for last year's Phillies bullpen?
No, it was historically bad.
Historically bad. So is it going to be that bad again?
No. They've taken the steps to improve it. They've got good veterans in there. They've got guys who can throw harder. I would like to see Archie Bradley up his max velocity. He's only been sitting – his max velocity his last two outings has been 92.5. He needs to be up around 94, 95 to be effective. So we need that to tick up. Hector Neris is supposedly adding a slider, but Hector Neris, I really like him, but he's another too much traffic guy. I'm really keeping an eye on Jose Alvarado. He's 99.7 miles per hour. That guy throws nothing straight. People can't hit him. I mean, yeah, he gives up home runs every now and again, but that's what happens when you throw that damn hard. He said he was frustrated in Tampa Bay. They told him he had a chance at closing in 2018. Then they started doing the roulette and he didn't like that. And then that was 2019. Last year he gained weight over COVID and didn't really pitch well. So he showed up 40 pounds lighter than last year, you know, best shape season. And he's lighting up the radar gun. Now, the key to this is Tony Watson has been improving. So if Tony Watson breaks camp with this team, they can use Alvarado in the ninth inning against Freddie Freeman.
And so, you have done the
there's a lot of good left-handed hitters in this division, so there could be a path. I'm not saying Alvarado's going to close, but I'm saying he could be a very cheap double-digit saves guy at for free.
And you and Aaron have already become best friends. I think that you and I have now become best friends because you did not mention Brandon Kinsler's name in this roundup. Despite the four innings of clean ball and four strikeouts, Kinsler is not on the radar, and I love it.
Look at his K to walk rate.
Oh, I know what it is. Oh,
trust me. It's 1930s-esque. We talked about it.
You want to talk about the most 10 smoke and mirror saves in baseball last year? They were all Brandon Kinsler. And God bless him for getting those saves, but he's a great bullpen. I mean, he's a great guy to have in the bullpen. His nickname's Salt. He's, you know, he's a competitor and he's fiery, but he's the fifth best reliever on that team.
Yep. That makes me feel much. Actually, I have nothing against Brandon Kinsler. I don't know exactly why that it started with. I think it started with Ellen Adair 10, 15 episodes ago. I went on a tangent about his came on his walk, and he's one of like three relievers that have had over 20 saves in the last 10 years that had a K rate of less than, you know, 12%. And you know, it's not a good looking list, and he just gets them done ugly. So
it's not a good look. It's not a good look either when your when your closer leads your team in saves and wins, like Richard Rodriguez did last year for the Pirates. Is he sticking around to be the closer for the whole year, or is he like an obvious dump halfway through the year?
That they're going to trade him now. Pittsburgh learned their lesson last year. They held on to Kayla too long, and then he got hurt, and then they got nothing for him. So yes, Pittsburgh will trade him. Their beat writers were saying it would be before the season, but I don't think that's going to happen. Now we all talked about it. This would be a natural person. If something happens in Houston, this would be an easy get. Okay. So, if there's any injuries that pop up in the next week or two, Rodriguez could go. And that means there's a contending team, either one of their setup guys or, something else happens and they need to get an arm back in there. Rodriguez would fit that bill well. Luckily today, Kyle Crick did get his fastball velo up a mile per hour. He got it up to 93.4. So we would like to get that 1.5 tick higher. If we can get him back to 95 miles per hour with that slider, we could be on to something. You know, they're going to bring Cedarlin along slow, but he does have a 98 mile per hour sinker, and then he's got the 90 mile per hour cutter. So there's hope for the future with him. So we'll see what happens. So you can take Rodriguez, but you're going to get what, 5 saves before they deal him off. I mean, I don't see the point. You can wait a lot later and get Crick and just hold on and hope he gets you like 7-10 until they hand off to Cedarlin and things of that nature. But yeah, I would take the long view in this bullpen.
Yes, yeah, super deep. Rule 5, Luis Oviedo is a name that I've looked into a little bit. I mean, he's only 21 years old, but he has some electric stuff from previous years. It's just I don't know when it might be another year before we see him move up, but it's Pittsburgh. Hell, he could be their closer in 2 months from now for all we know. We wish we knew. I wish I knew as much about the San Diego Padres 9th inning. I mean, you want to talk about I think it's confusing. You might have maybe less confusion coming.
Well, luckily there was a mailbag segment today on The Athletic that I read before we came on air with Dennis Lim, and he said he still thinks it's Pagan as the right-handed arm to get saves. Keela's really – it pains me to say this, but Keela's looked very good this spring. And he did again today. Clean. I think he gave up a hit with a strikeout today, but he's been getting a lot of swings and misses this spring. You know, it's never been a question of stuff with Keela. It's been mental. I mean, if Adrian Beltre complains about you, what kind of person can you be? And his health. So if he's healthy and dealing. I wrote that in the little blurb today about the Padres. I'm like, I think he's already leapfrogged Melanson. I don't know. We'll have to see if he can leapfrog Pagan. Pagan's kind of all or nothing. He either strikes out the side or he gives up a 2-run dong. So Pomeranz is going to get saves, but he's the fireman stopper or whatever term you want to give to him. And I did change that on my charts. You know, I used to have, it was closer and then next in line. I switched it to stopper because there's a lot of guys like Pomeranz and Gallegos that they're so valuable in that stopper role. That's what kind of pigeonholes them into those spots. So it depresses their total amount of saves, but they still give you fantasy value depending on your league format.
Does anything depress the amount of saves more than Gabe Kapler being the manager in San Francisco?
Yeah, he was a little better last year. They want Maranta to do it. Same thing. We haven't seen him throw in spring.
Every too report, fat? Is that a thing?
Every report I read says he showed up out of – I mean, come on. I mean, this ain't rocket science. I mean –
have they seen Armando
Benitez? I bust my ass on all these articles. This guy can't eat clean for a couple of months and show up in shape to make money and win a role. I mean, come on. Get your head out of your ass, kid. Whatever. I don't know. Everyone wants it to be Maranta. I don't think it's going to be. You know what I'd really like to see? Aaron Sanchez not be a starter and go in and be the Batman and Robin with him and McGee at the top of that bullpen. That would be cool. I don't think they'll do it, but if Sanchez can't get up to past three innings, why wouldn't you? If you're going to get 85 innings out of Aaron Sanchez, why wouldn't you use it in high leverage?
I'd take it. I took him in the last round of – or the next last of TGFBI and hoping – I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love to see him as a starter and, you know, in San Francisco and with hopeful, you know, resurgence of what we've seen in the past. But I think that's a great idea, something I haven't even honestly looked into.
I mean, this year you could use him like the Reds did with Gausman and, you know, build up his innings and get him back on track in the bullpen and then next year turn him loose as a starter. I mean, that'd be the easiest way to me – to rebuild his market and build up his stamina. But we'll see how they handle it. I still like McGee at his price point. And then I wouldn't touch any of the righties at this moment unless it was a walk-off ceiling hit on Sanchez, and then we'll see what happens. I do like Camilo Doval in keeper dynasty leagues, though. That kid's going to be the goods.
From one relief pitching nut to another, I'm probably never going to get to give you advice, but here's a little bit of advice. Don't mention Caleb Berrigar's name on Twitter because he has like this cult following that will like trash your DMs anytime you say anything remotely close to negative about Caleb Berrigar. Insider relief pitching talk right there for sure.
Well, he might not break camp with the team, but we'll leave that off the table. Yep.
We didn't and say you, that. That was great. Exactly. That was
G-J-E-W-E-T-T. Good luck.
Nate, your Cardinals.
I don't have anything other than let's tell me why we're both geniuses for drafting Jordan Hicks as many times as we have.
Because Eno Saris agrees with us.
There you go. That's a pretty good reason.
All right, now listen. The guy's a really good – he's a freak athlete. He threw 100 miles per hour in the B game. He went through the side on 11 pitches. Now, we always worried about Hicks and his command, but he's so far from Tommy John and opting out last year. You want to talk fresh. You know, this guy, I think, is chomping at the bit. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, they might depress him at the beginning and hold him back. However you want to slice it, he's going to get the most saves in his bullpen with health. And that's always just been the thing with him. So, yeah, I as a matter of fact, I put him in my column that was on The Athletic today. I had a little section at the bottom. I called it plant your flag. I said, I'm planting my flag on Jordan Hicks this year. So he's my ride or die. If he blows up, then I'm a jerk. But I just trust the stuff. And, you know, that slider with that 100-mile-per-hour sinker, I mean, the guy has a negative launch angle against.
And who is the new addition at third base for that team?
Oh, some guy that plays pretty good, Arenado.
Might be decent with the 60.
I'm more excited about Arenado's glove to help Hicks than I am as him as a fantasy asset, but that's fine.
We had a plant your flag episode on this show, and Jordan Hicks was my plant your flag. When was that? January 1st, maybe something like that. Yeah. None of us are trying to be the, you know, get in early, but the best thing is about all this is that we've got such good value. And we can't say value, but I'm going to say value because I don't really care. Because there is value, you know. But yeah, he has everything I think in his favor. I will say we were talking a little bit about Alex Reyes. If Reyes could just, if the health, if I could sprinkle health dust over anybody, and I'm me being a Cardinals fan, over one person on our team, Alex Reyes is obviously the one who has the most effortless. It looks effortless the way he goes about, just like Jordan Hicks. Hicks has 102 out of this compact delivery. It's incredible. Let's not talk about the Cardinals anymore. We're running
time. Sorry. Yeah, I know the time's going on, but yeah, I mean, they can shorten games with those guys. If you get a pitcher to whatever, you get Reyes in for two innings, Gallegos for one, and Hicks for the last one. That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Some guy who everyone is talking about is Velo, but not for those same reasons, and that's Brad Hand. How was his velocity last time out?
Well, he threw today, I did tweet it out, and you know it's the same. If you look at his game by game last year, not just like when you look at the year thing, it zigs down. Last year, his game by game velocity was like an EKG, and today was the same thing. His max was 92.6, and his min was 90.6. It's like, well, where do these pitches come from? It's like boop 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 boop. I don't know. He gave up. I think a hit and a walk today, and it wasn't to starters. Listen, I'm a Tannerini guy. So if anything does happen to Hand, all of my Tannerini shares are going to ride off into the sunset and be ecstatic. I think, you know, he's another one. If you're stashing for the second half, that's another guy that I do like. Now, again, he had like a little thing with his, they're saying I told you I'm fried today, but it wasn't his shoulder or elbow or anything else. It was a different in his chest, like a pectoral thing. That's why they're holding him back. He should make his debut hopefully this weekend. But he was filthy. He was another one of those guys I talked about with the hater thing. He was one of the 12 relievers to reach those protocols last year. So, you know, he took the next step. If he can carry that over and stay healthy, he's filthy.
All 30 teams, bullpens with Greg Jewett. Amazing. Greg, I love your closer chart, so I'm going to throw one curveball at you. It's like so super organized, and it looks great and everything. And sometimes I just like to look at the names of guys I've never heard of before. And so J.B. Bukauskas has to be the number one name on the list of like crazy-ass names you've put in your chart. What, either this year or over the years, what's like the craziest name you've thrown up in your chart there and been like, I don't know who the hell this guy is, but he's going to be up on my chart here in a second.
It just kind of depends. My poor girlfriend might be the most patient person on earth, because before bed, I go through and read all 30. I go through The Athletic and make sure that there's no new articles. Then when I wake up at 5, I go through MLB.com, each one of the team things on there, and I read whatever new updates come up. And then I'm screenshotting and putting stuff together, and I'm scribbling on the side so I know if it's a tweet I'm adding or a screenshot. And then I'm typing them up as I'm getting ready for school. And then I'm literally at school sometimes updating the closer chart while I'm taking temperatures of the kids coming in for COVID and trying to do it. Again, God bless you, Katie. If she listens to this, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't have her support. And when I got the Athletic job, it blew my mind. And then she was like, it's your time. You deserve this. And those are things I think we all need to hear sometimes. And that went a long way towards making me stay the course and keep plugging. So another good friend of mine from my old home league I used to do, I actually turned in my spot in the home league, and I was really upset. But you know, with all this stuff going on, it's like, I don't want to be a jerk, but I'm not going to be stashing Jordan Hicks in this home league anymore, because I'm going to be focused on talc and all this other crap. And I'm like, I'm not trying to be big time. It's just, I'm not going to have the time or the energy. I'm trying to keep all this stuff going. And I just, you have to know when to say no. But it kills me, because that team, I had Liam Hendricks for $1, because I got him before he popped. And I had Jordan Hicks for $4.
If that spot's still available, Nate Markham.
Right. Well, by the way, Nate also Markham, that team has
happy to jump in the league.
So listen to this: that team has Bieber, Soto, Vlad Jr.
Okay, never mind. At Fantasy Triage on Twitter, find me. I'll be happy to join that league. Greg, we are happy that you came on and spent an hour of your time with us to break down all the bullpens. We couldn't have a relief pitcher freaking podcast if there was no Greg Jewett, and now we've got Greg Jewett on for a full episode. So, Greg, if they don't know who you are, and I don't know who doesn't know who you are, big timer, let them know where they can find all of your stuff, how they can interact with you, and I know that you will be just like Eno Sears DMing your fans.
Well, that is too kind. Thank you. I will never be too big for any of that stuff. But yes, at GJEWETT9, I try and do my best to update the closer charts in the morning. I did already do the afternoon games because I had a little respite today. My being in the hotel, I got to kill time. So the games that were between 1 and 3 are already updated. I'll add links later on. And then obviously you can find my my closer articles on The Athletic. I get a little break. I'll update rankings for Monday. We ranked the top 60 close, well, for saves. I also did a top 120 for save holds. I included charts in there that you can download. So if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can go right in there. There's a spreadsheet that has SGPs by saves, solds, and I also sorted it by solds per game from the second half of 2019 through 2020. And I also do stuff at Fantasy Alarm. I do a spring updates hitter article every day. That's a poor man's mining the news, and then other stuff of that nature, and player profiles up on there, this, that, and the other. I get spread a little thin. And last but not least, I also do coffee and closers on Substack. You can just search that and find it. And, you know, for now it's free, although my girlfriend's pushing me to start making that.
Get there before the paywall, people. Get there before the paywall.
But anyways, so again, thank you guys for everything. I love everything that you're doing. And yes, I have listened to one of your episodes before. So, you know, keep plugging away. Again, I wrote for free for 2 years at Roto Analysis before I got to FanRag. And I thought I was the luckiest man alive because I got paid to put out information. And then I was able to springboard that into bullpen reports on FanGraphs with Al Melchior. And then you know, the stuff at Fantasy Alarm and now at The Athletic. And I don't know how it happened other than just a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And, you know, that's what I think keeps us going in all of this. But I love it. And, you know, I wouldn't sit up and read 60 or check 60, you know, things a day if it wasn't something that, you know, made me happy. And, you know, I attribute all of that to the fun stuff we do in this community. And again, it's congratulations again, baby. Nate, keep up all the great work with those intros. They're fantastic. I'm happy the segues are easy. And again, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's awesome.
Let me.
All of your success was well deserved. I can exactly. tell you that right now. Don't be too humble.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Well, just take it, Greg. Just take it.
I know. I appreciate everything that you're saying. And I've always been a deflector my whole life. But, I shared an article, and my students, they do reflections for phys ed. We don't like giving them quizzes like junior, senior year. So we find like 4 articles, and one of them, it was just advice on like things you have to stop doing. And one of them was, one of the options was stop thinking small. And she looked right at me. She goes, that's yours. She's like, stop thinking small. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Greg, we really appreciate your time and much success going forward. Of course, if you don't subscribe to The Athletic, you need to, not just for Greg, but for all the other great content. We're subscribers. So go head over to The Athletic. If you're looking for our stuff, you can find us on fantasyinframes.com. Find me on Twitter at Fantasy Triage, Nate on Twitter at Nate Markham. We're happy to interact with you too. So for Nate and for myself and for Greg, thanks everyone for tuning in and have a great night.
Post game show is brought to you by Christ, I can't find it. The hell with it.